Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast supported by Hunt Bike Wheels. As ever, I'm going to be bringing you the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking. First up, here's a deal for you from the team over at Hunt Bike Wheels, part of the Rider Firm Group. Hunt strive to go above and beyond by bringing the latest technology and engineering to all things round, with the aim to simply create the best wheel for all types of riding. They've got a great range of wheels in both aluminium and carbon for you to choose from over at huntbikewheels.com. Hunt wheels are used by a number of top riders, including enduro star Matt Stoddard, who I recently interviewed on the podcast, and he raved about them. They're available online or through your local bike shop, and Hunt will make sure you can always get in touch with someone if you need help with knowledge, parts, or servicing related to their wheels. For Downtime listeners, Hunt are kindly offering 10% off all of their wheels over at huntbikewheels.com for the month of December. Just use the code DOWNTIME10 at the checkout. That's DOWNTIME, all in lowercase, followed by the number 10. I've had a lot of people get in touch to say they'd like to make a contribution to help keep the podcast going, but they don't need another t-shirt or they don't want to ship more products around the world. I totally agree with not buying things that you don't need, so I've created a way for you to contribute towards the podcast without any product being created. Just head to our web store at downtimepodcast.com and click on Share the Love. Contributions start from £5 and go up to whatever you feel the podcast is worth to you, so go and check it out. If you do need a new t-shirt, sweatshirt, hoodie or mug, then they're still there, and I recently updated the t-shirts with beefed up logos and some new colours too. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you get every episode delivered to your device as soon as it drops. Just head to downtimepodcast.com/subscribe and you'll find all the links that you need. On that same page, there's a form to join our newsletter. We're not going to send you loads of emails or share your details with anyone, but you will get our weekend warm-up email every Friday. It's got some interesting bike-related stuff from that week for you to look at and get stoked for a weekend on the trails. Once you've filled out the form, you'll get an email that you do need to open and confirm your subscription, so please don't forget to check your junk mail. Alright, this week I'm joined by Joe Smith. In 2019, Joe has had what he himself describes as a tough season, and that leaves him in a tricky position of not currently having a spot on a team for 2020. This episode goes to show how tough it can be to make a living out of this sport, and how much pressure the riders are under to perform. We cover Joe's career so far, including his love for flat pedals, his struggles with arm pump, having teammates like Sam Hill and Sam Blenkinsop, and plenty more. So, without further ado, here's Joe Smith. Joe Smith, welcome to the Downtime Podcast.
Cool, yeah. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, pleasure. And for the first time ever, we're in a real-life studio, which is quite a treat.
Yeah. It's a crazy place. We're just kind of down the road from where I'm living at Robbie Mead's house, or where he's living at the moment. He's got his family have got this recording studio and his setup for where his company's based and stuff. So
yeah, mad. I've literally never been in a real recording studio, and it's
no, me either.
It's cool. So hopefully this podcast will sound really good.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, then I've done a really bad job.
Yeah.
Well, let's start from the start. And you grew up pretty local to here. Tell us a bit about childhood and getting into riding.
So yeah, I grew up probably 25 minutes away from here. In Mid Wales, people who are into racing will know Cersws. That was my kind of local track when I grew up, really. That was my closest national that we ever had. I kind of got into mountain biking just, you know, as you are as a kid. Me and my sister had bikes, and my dad was quite into it, and we'd go on holiday, caravan and stuff with the bikes and stuff, and nice. Down to the Forest of Dean before it was kind of a proper venue. I think that's where we used to go sometimes, and yeah, we'd always just have the bikes with us riding and stuff, and just kind of evolved from there.
Yeah, and was it like the downhill or the gravity side of things that attracted you, or did you just like being out on a bike?
I always liked being out on a bike, but I always used to. We've got a little bit of land around my mum and dad's house, not loads, but enough where you can kind of build some jumps. So me and my friends would always just build probably what would now be like a molehill of a jump, but I'd always go out there, I'd always be slipping my pedals, getting cut shins and stuff. My shins are a right mess now from it, but so I was always into jumps and stuff, and yeah, I think downhill was just kind of when I started racing was the thing that I wanted to do.
Yeah, so. And you've been, I guess, kind of spoilt with racing in this area of the UK. Was your first race a downhill race?
Yeah, I think so. Actually, when I was really, really young, I did some kind of weird downhill dually kind of weird thing a place called the Bulthy, which is quite near Welshpool, between Welshpool and Shrewsbury. And I remember there was two of us racing. And I was just some young little thing, and this guy who raced against me was a real good sport, to be fair to him, looking back at it. And he just kind of played with me, let me think that I was kind of giving him a good run for his money. And apparently, he must have made a mistake right at the bottom. I almost actually beat him, but obviously. So, yeah. And then my first kind of proper race was at Nantmel Quarry, which is kind of famous. One used to have the RAV4 races there, I think. It was after that. And now it's kind of famous for hard enduro motorbike stuff. They have an event called the Tough One there. That's only local to here, probably 15 minutes away.
Yeah.
And I had a little Saracen 24-inch hardtail with red RST forks on it. And yeah, I had a little race, probably finished about 15th, I think, something like that. And then just kind of, yeah, I was well into it. I went and bought, my parents went and bought me probably the previous year's Orange Patriot, I think it was, a little tiny thing. And yeah, and that's where it started. I had that for a few years and kind of moved on from there.
So, and you grew up in the kind of Dragon Downhill era, I suppose.
Yeah.
Do you remember what those events were like back in the day? Because they had a bit of a reputation for being quite full on.
Yeah, they were pretty crazy. So I did all the Dragons when I started, and my first proper race was a Pierce Cycles one. But so I'd do the Pierce races and the Dragon races. Back then, the Dragon races, I think you had a race on the Saturday and the Sunday. So you'd have a bit of practice and a couple of race runs each day. And I think the series was like a 12, 14 round series, because it was each day. But yeah, going down to places like Minnith D, I think, was the one that sticks out in my mind. The first time we raced, I crashed in practice, broke my bike, and we had to drive into the local town, try and fix it, and going down. And I remember, I can't remember if you're like pushing over sections or just getting off and crashing. And it felt like a pretty monumental task just to get down back then.
So. Yeah, it was a good schooling though for a lot of riders, because it was, I mean, technically, the tracks were pretty challenging. Yeah,
I'd say so, for sure.
Yeah. And so do you remember your first World Cup then, your first trip? Was it Vigo?
Vigo was my first one, yeah. I can't really remember too much about it. I remember it rained, I think, for finals or qualifying or one of them. I was riding for Ancelotti at the time. Pretty cool venue to go to. It was all like, you know, you've seen all these top riders for the first time and stuff. And yeah, I just remember being kind of in my element. I just wanted to kind of crack on and see how I could do. And it all went pretty well. And Yeah,
27th, I think.
I think so, yeah. Like I said, the weather definitely played a part.
Right.
One thing I do remember, I think I always said, like, oh, it started raining. I didn't by any means have the worst of it, but I didn't have, like, that clear vision either.
Okay.
So, yeah, I was pretty stoked for that for a start. And back then it was, like, as everyone says, juniors were in with the elites back then. So.
Yeah, can you remember how old you were?
I would have been 16 then.
Fair play. Yeah,
so.
So you must have walked away with that. From that, with a fair deal of confidence.
Yeah, I think so. It was a cool event. And I think for that first round, I had to get a British jersey. I think it wasn't long after they'd kind of introduced the rule where you had to have a certain amount of points, or you had to be on a UCI trade team, or you had to have a jersey. And I wasn't. I didn't have the points. I wasn't on a trade team.
Yeah.
So I got the jersey. But luckily, after getting that, I had the points. So then after that, I was riding my own team's colours and stuff. So.
Yeah, sweet. How did that compare to your experience in the UK then? Because it's, I mean, the courses are generally a bit longer. We don't have big hills over here, really.
Yeah. I think luckily that was a relatively short track, completely different terrain to what we were used to, but relatively short track. And yeah, I think probably naively, I thought at the time that the UK was, like, we were top riders then. So I thought, oh, if I'm one of the top UK riders, I should be one of the top riders within the junior kind of guys at the World Cup. And I was there or thereabouts, I guess. So it kind of gave me a bit of confidence going in.
Yeah. So it sounds like you weren't too kind of stressed by the experience. You found you were quite confident going in.
I think so. Yeah. Like, from what I can remember, I don't remember being too stressed about qualifying or any of that. I guess you were just there to see what you could do as the first race. And
yeah. What level of support did you have at that point? You mentioned you were on Ancelotti, but what was the kind of setup with them?
So me, Matt Simmons was actually on the team as well. And team manager Bill Henson, I think we drove all the way down in a VW Transporter, and it was just us. We probably had an easy up or two. Pretty sure we didn't have a mechanic. My mum and dad probably flew out to it. I think they did. But yeah, it was kind of, I had more support than a lot of juniors probably do, but it wasn't like a full factory setup that people have these days.
Yeah. And your dad used to help out quite a bit, didn't he? With like a lot. Mechanic and bike setup.
Especially after that. I guess we might move on to that, but a few years later that we were kind of doing our own thing for 2 years, and he'd come to all the races and was my mechanic and drove out, did all the driving and everything.
Yeah, I was gonna ask kind of where it went from there, like how you progressed to kind of doing full World Cup series. And
So yeah, after riding for Ancelotti for that year, I had the opportunity to ride for Tomac Bikes. Claudio Calori actually ran the team.
Okay.
So there was me, two Australian juniors, and a local Swiss junior as well, who was on the team. And I kind of went and lived out in Switzerland for the year. So I was 17 at the start of that year. It was my second year as a junior, going into 18. And we did all the European and the Canadian World Cup. I did kind of IXS European Series, a couple of like individual IXS Swiss Cups and stuff like that as well. And that was a great year. It was quite hard being away from home that young at that kind of age. But I enjoyed every bit of it. It probably cost my parents quite a bit. At the time, I didn't really think it did. But I mean, I got the bikes and the travel and all that paid for me, but kind of living out there.
Yeah.
One of the Australian juniors, his mum and dad came out and they were like looking after us when we were over there.
Nice.
So I'd probably kind of do maybe a month over there, the load of race back to back, and I'd come home for a few weeks and then. And then at the end of that year, Claudio, I think he was like, he talked to me about, he was signing with Scott to kind of start running that program. And I had a few little offers. I was talking to MBUK magazine at the time. They had a team with Slugger and Neil Donoghue.
Yeah.
I think they were talking to Sam Dale at the same time as well. He's the same age as me. Things were kind of looking hopeful for that. And then they pulled that team in the end. And I was kind of lost without any ride. And then I got talking, or I managed to get through to somebody at Kona. And yeah, it all kind of looked pretty good. As a first year elite, I think I was, going into first year elite.
Yeah.
They were going to give me, I can't remember what it was, I think it was like 5,000 either US or Canadian dollars to help towards the race. And okay. Give me all the frame and the bike and stuff. And then. Yeah. They'd give me support at the Canadian and American rounds, so I'd fly out there by myself. But so that was kind of all I had. And my dad, luckily, he took all his holidays off work. He drove out in his company car at the time, which was like a hatchback Mondeo. Nice. We had a roof box on the bot, a couple of easy ups up on there, and it was packed to the brim. And it was a good fun year.
Yeah. Is he a good mechanic?
Did everything. I don't remember there being the thing I remember was a couple of times the tires being on backwards. But I got quite good at changing tires, so if he did that, I'd just quickly flip him around. Other than that, I think he was pretty good, really. He's an engineer as well by trade, an electrical engineer, but so he was quite into all the mechanical side of things.
Cool. And was he a good person to have around as well, like with the mental side and the rest of the support that you need?
Yeah, my dad's always been pretty easygoing. He hasn't been like super pushy. He obviously always wanted me to do as well as I could, and he'd kind of step in when he thought it was appropriate, but he was never kind of stressed me out or anything. When he come to the top with me with the turbo trainer and stuff, he'd always be pretty chilled, and he'd just let me get on with it and ask if I needed any help with anything.
So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, good person to have on board.
Yeah, definitely.
And so at that point in your racing career, like what were your dreams? What were you hoping to achieve?
I don't know. I made that transition into elite quite well, I think. So riding for Kona, I think the first national I did in the UK, I think I was on the podium or there or thereabouts. I think it was up in A Forest. So I kind of straight away started doing all right. And I think the World Cups weren't brilliant. I think they finished off with maybe a top 20 at Schladming or something. Okay. So pretty good. I think my kind of goal was to kind of build on that going from there, kind of be more consistently in the top 20 and into the top 10s and stuff like that. And I can't remember really setting a goal of being like, oh, I want to win a World Cup. I think everyone who's racing would kind of, that's a bit of a dream, but never realistically. I think I just wanted to kind of keep building every year or every race or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just kind of get consistency. I think that's what I was looking for.
Yeah. And then 2011, you got picked up by Chain Reaction Cycles, which that must have felt like a pretty big deal at that point, because it was that was a big team.
Yeah, definitely. So they'd done probably 3 years into their time, and they were intense before I was on them. I'd had 2 years on Kona. The second year was pretty good. I had a few crashes, but some really good results. And that was kind of my first, I'd say now, looking back, my first kind of time signing to be a professional rider, really. I'd never made money out of it before that. We'd always get expenses and stuff, and it wouldn't really cover the year. So, signing for them, getting to ride with Matt again. We had Matty on the team, who was guys won World Cups and like overall podiums and stuff. Big, big name. And Nigel on the team. It was a great opportunity, and it was just everything I dreamed of, really.
Yeah. So moving up from, like you say, a kind of a pretty simple, almost privateer program, really, I suppose, to effectively a factory team like that. What changed for you? Like, what was the difference in the team structure and the support and all that side of things?
So I guess, I went from traveling everywhere with my dad and my mum, come to a lot of the races as well, to then doing a lot of it by myself. Luckily, I had Matt, who was going out with my sister at the time, so I knew him really well, so that probably helped me a lot. So we had a couple of mechanics, full-time mechanics. We had the van all kitted out, all the spares you could ever need, like some really good brands supporting us, and Nigel giving me advice from all his years of racing and everything. So it was completely different, really, and it's great.
Yeah, and the first time having a teammate who's been at that high level, I guess, with Matty.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. What sort of stuff did you pick up from him?
I can't remember if the first year if he was coming off an injury, because unfortunately for Matty, he always had a lot of injuries.
Yeah, he definitely managed to hit
the
ground.
Actually, I think the first round I did, I think it was just me and Matty, actually, because it was in South Africa, and Matt Simmons had, unfortunately, had like pre-season test camp. We went over to Ireland to see CRC and do a little race over there. Matt broke his kneecap. I think Lewis Buchanan was riding for the team as well, and he broke his shoulder. He had a lot of shoulder problems, so I think he did something like dislocated shoulder or something then. Yeah. So it ended up being just me and Matty getting to that first one, which was pretty cool. I think I probably did a bit of practicing with him and stuff, and it was never my preferred track, but he probably pulled me on, helped me at that one. I think I instinctively probably, I probably picked up a lot more than I realized from Matty.
Yeah. Do you think it's important then for people to ride with riders that are faster or better than them? Do you think that helps a lot?
Yeah, 100%. Just like when you can feel like you're going as fast as you can when you're by yourself, and you're probably like a little bit too in control. And then if there's that somebody, like no one wants to get dropped, so you're always going to be trying to keep up with them and maybe push yourself a little bit beyond that. And whether you crash or not, it's getting you more confident, and maybe you see different lines that you didn't know happened, different techniques and things like that. And yeah, I think it's always going to help you improve as a rider.
Yeah, fair play. And then you went on to have Mr. Sam Hill join you on that team as well.
Yeah.
Latterly. What was it like having Sam as a teammate?
Yeah, that was crazy. I couldn't believe it when Nigel told me he was talking to Sam and that he thought it was going to be pretty likely that he was joining the team. So yeah, that was insane. Watching that guy ride, you'd follow him down, he'd get on these lines that you couldn't even imagine, and he could turn so quickly onto these crazy lines, and it just always looked easy. And that was definitely an experience.
Yeah. Did you ever come unstuck trying to follow him?
Probably did, yeah. Nothing that sticks out on my mind, but I definitely remember having my mind blown quite a few times. Yeah.
Was it intimidating to have someone like that join the team? Because he was really at the top of his game.
Yeah, I think so. Well, actually, again, when Sam, I think he was having a little bit of a lull. And the first year, he had a few really good results, maybe a podium or two. But he wasn't right at the very, very top. But then I think a fire lit in him, because the second and third years that he was on the team, especially the second year, he was an animal, and he was pushing for the wins. And yeah, that year he was insane.
Do you think that kind of helps drag the rest of the team up with it, or does it almost create a bit of a barrier because you're like, whoa, this person's so kind of...
That second year was one of my best years that I've had, I think. Mike Jones had joined the team, so I had this young Welsh kid who was crazy fast, really naturally talented. So he was pushing me from there, and then Sam was like dragging me along as well. So I think we as a team had some really good ones. And that was, I think it was that year anyway, that in Wyndham, we all had top tens and we were the fastest team of the day. So that was my only time standing on a World Cup podium, really.
Fair play.
So, yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, so that structure helped drag you on.
Yeah, I think Nigel would say, Mike and Sam would say that was one of the, in downhill at least, one of the best years they've had.
Yeah.
So.
Nice. Good thing. Yeah, good thing to be part of.
Definitely, yeah.
And you're a flat pedal rider.
Yep.
Have you always been?
For the most part, I'd say 95% of the time. I started off on flats. I did maybe a year when I was in youth or something. I think I did a year, but I'd chop and change. I wouldn't always use clips. I'd change. And then I did most of my elite career the year, I think the first year Sam joined the team, I decided, right, I'm going to go clips. I'm going to see if that helps me. And I was pretty confident in the fact that it was going to do well. And I had an all right year. And then the next year, I started off on clips again, went to South Africa. Probably was the best idea for there anyway.
Yeah.
And then from South Africa, we went over to Sam's house for a week before the Cairns World Cup, which ended up being a mud bog race. And I probably would have used flats there anyway because of that. But when I was at Sam's house, I checked the flats on. It was all that kind of moon dust, like really slippy stuff. And I was just having a bit of fun. And I think over them 2 weeks of there and the race, Sam and Nige both kind of convinced me that I was a better rider on flats. And I think I had done a lot more time riding on flats anyway. I think I could just commit in the corners a bit more. And so, yeah, since then I haven't really looked back.
Yeah. You've never thought to kind of try clips again? Because there's not many left on flats.
No, there's not many of us left at all. It goes through my head from time to time, but I really enjoy just riding flats, just for general riding anyway. Maybe if I'd given myself a couple of years on clips back to back, I might have got that confidence.
Yeah.
But I don't have them issues I used to have maybe a long time ago, slipping my feet off pedals.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, they're much better these days, I think. Yeah. That interface, if you've got decent shoes and decent pedals, of which there's a few choices these days.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm pretty happy that it's the best thing for me.
Yeah. So. Yeah, if you're comfortable, I guess. Yeah. That's the most important thing, isn't it? And did you do a bit of development with Nukeproof as well at that point?
Yeah, I guess we did. We went through probably three incarnations of the Nukeproof. When I joined the team, that's when Nukeproof had first started, really.
Yeah.
I think they had tested the bikes for a few years before that, and we'd always give feedback on what we thought was really good and bad about the bikes. I remember going testing with them, I think, when the first and second generation, from the Scalp to the Pulse, and yeah, that was a really cool experience working with the engineers and stuff.
Yeah. So. Does it help you learn a bit more about what you want in a bike and how to set up as well?
I think, like, I've always thought, oh, I'm not the best at kind of set up and this and that. But the older I've got and the more I think back on them, actually now I do know pretty instinctively, like, what I like on a bike and how I like it set up. So I probably have learned quite a lot over these years. Yeah.
Yeah, and so do you feel that those test days, which again I guess can be quite long and involved, do you think what you've learned now helps you at a race weekend, like to kind of
get
quicker to where you want to be on the
I
bike?
I think so, yeah, definitely.
And moving teams as well, I guess, and changing bikes is always a challenge. But yeah, fair play. And you were, am I right in saying 2015 British National Series champion?
I think it was 2015 on Nukeproof. Yeah, I was on the first incarnation of the Pulse, I think.
Yeah. How important is that to you? Because a lot of World Cup British riders don't seem that fussed about the British National Series.
Yeah. I think back then it was still, I remember at least for the most part, there was a lot of the top guys at the Athens. G was at most of the rounds. I remember Danny being at quite a few, Josh from Bryson and Sam Dale and Matt Simmons. A lot, like the Saracen team did a lot of the World Cups. CRC always did all the the Nationals when I was there. I think maybe people missed out a few rounds, but compared to what it is now, there was a much bigger kind of elite field with the top riders there. So it was, I was over the moon to win that year. It was, I think I'd had one national win the year before. That was my first national win. And then that year I managed to get another two back to back. And that, all the top guys were there at them races I did then.
Yeah, that's a tough series to win when you got that lot. Yeah,
and then I almost had three in a row. Matt beat me by like a couple of tenths at Mulfrew. So, yeah, it was epic. Like, I was stoked to win that season.
Yeah. Does it not hold the same kind of importance for you anymore? Because, like you say, the series is maybe not as well attended.
Yeah, I mean, I think I hear it a lot. Like, I want to start doing more of them. Over the last couple of years, when I was with Norco, it definitely wasn't a kind of priority for them. And I think that's when the series started changing, really.
Yeah.
I can't remember what year it was that Sai stopped doing it, but I think that was the changing point. And, I haven't always heard the best things. I've done a couple of them since, and they seemed all right.
Yeah. You won one this summer, in fact.
Yeah. Went to Hopton this year, which was good fun. It did feel a little bit just like a Pierce race. It was kind of strange. And there wasn't that many top guys. It was like me, Adam Brayton, and Joe Breeden was there.
Yeah.
But with it being Hopton and pretty short, fast track, all the guys who do the Pierce races, do the Nationals and a lot of the World Cups anyway, they were like there or thereabouts. Yeah. So you can't, like, on a track like Hopton or a lot of the UK tracks, you can't hang around. The guys are always there. So
yeah, and on a short track, there's not a lot of time to separate people. No, so not at all. It's always going to be close.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, I really hope that the British scene does get a bit bigger and people are going to start kind of committing to going to more of them again.
Yeah.
That's what I'd like to see, because it was good looking back at it, having a lot of the top guys at the UK races, and it definitely is going to help the scene in the UK and the young riders.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have more opportunities to see the top British guys and girls racing, definitely. For sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So you're on CRC for quite a while, but then made a move on to Norco a few years back.
Yep.
How do you approach moving teams? Because there's a lot to it. It's not just a new bike. There's a whole new set of people, new infrastructure. What's your kind of process for making a move like that?
So yeah, I've been on CRC for 6 years before changing to Norco. It was quite a hard decision for me. I was quite upset kind of leaving, really. I remember CRC put kind of a farewell video out, and it really made me kind of tear up a little bit, because I remember 6 really good years of my life with them, and like Nige and the other guys on the team were like family to me, pretty much. At the time, Sam had been injured a little bit, and Nige told me that they were kind of looking towards doing a more of a kind of split thing with the EWS, Sam potentially focusing on that. But they still wanted to do downhill. They still had Mike, and Elliot was kind of coming up through the ranks then. So he was kind of talking about that, and he was saying how he kind of wanted me to maybe do some more video stuff a bit as well. Because I'd done quite a few video things with Neat Proof over the years. And at the time, I kind of still really felt like I had more in me in downhill, and I wanted to focus on that. And I sent a few emails out and ended up talking to Todd and kind of just asked him what he could offer me. And he offered me a really good deal. And their focus was 100% the downhill World Cups and Crankworx and just downhill, really. And I spoke to Nige a bit more, and I was really on the fence a bit, but CRC just didn't have the budget to kind of offer me the same kind of deal. And I didn't have that certainty in what they were focusing on. There was that split was coming, EWS and downhill. So I bit the bullet and moved on. So
fair play. And that's a pretty unique bike, I guess. I mean, a lot of people think it's just another high pivot idler bike, like Commensal or whatever. But it's quite an adjustable bit of kit, that.
Yeah. So when I first signed for Norco, it was a bit of a wait before the bike came, because the year before they had the old bike. And I remember a lot of people actually speaking to me when I had that new bike. They were like, oh, how's it compared to the old bike? I was like, I never rode the old one. I came straight in onto this one. So when we got it had like 3 different sets of linkages. And it was a really progressive bike, I think. And you could go from a super like 50% progression, or I don't know how that equates
Yeah, how they measure that sort of thing. Yeah,
but so there was three different ones. I think it was like a 50, a 45, and a 40, or even a 35% progression rating, or however it is. So yeah, first time I really played around with that stuff. I think I played around with it a little bit at home, but you kind of limited in the Welsh winter, steep, boggy, rutty tracks. You kind of just getting down it. You can't really feel what your bike's doing. The first time I met up with the team was over in New Zealand for the Crankworx. And we tried to do a little bit of testing there, both with SRAM RockShot guys and just by ourselves. We were a little bit limited there as well because the Redwoods at the time was being a bit forested, I think. So they didn't have the uplifts and it wasn't open to ride all the time, I don't think. But we did a bit of stuff on the Crankworx downhill track at the Skyline bike park thing. But yeah, there's loads of adjustability with it between them three links. I think we had more either that winter leading into the next year with the new bike, or I think we had multiple different ones. And Sam Blenkinsop was really into changing things up and trying everything and trying different things on different tracks, and I think that real progressive bike kind of suited his style, just really pushing into everything. So.
Yeah, he's a very dynamic rider on the bike, that's for sure.
Definitely.
And another good Sam to have on your team.
Yeah.
Another person to learn a bit from.
Yeah, definitely. I think I learned more from Blanky with his, how much he tried different things and setting up, and I think I learned more about how bikes work from him than anyone else.
Yeah, so that was a couple of years of spending a lot of time changing stuff and trying things. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, fair play. And Norco, although it was a reasonable sized team, it's still a lot smaller than some of the big World Cup teams that have got these massive trucks and full time physios and all this kind of stuff. Do you think riders that are on the still big teams but not to the kind of specialized Gravity or even Santa Cruz these days, like the scale of those teams, do you think there's a disadvantage to not having some of that infrastructure and staff on your team? Or
I guess it depends how well each team kind of puts their staff to work, really. I think there's advantages and disadvantages. I guess all them people working for you probably puts a lot more pressure on you, a lot more kind of stress into it. Either works like that, or it gives you all the ability to put everything just into that race run. I think there's kind of positives and negatives. Luckily, like you say, with the physios, these teams have the physios who work directly for them, but there's a few people who work on the circuit who you can go, if you've got a good relationship with them, you can go and see them. There's a guy, Martin, who worked, he kind of stopped, he came back towards the end of this year, but he wasn't there all the year this year, but he'd been on the scene since I started, and he's helped me out with a lot of injuries. So if I ever had a problem, I could go and see him.
Cool. Okay. So there's ways to close those gaps. Yeah.
And actually, the first year I was with Norco, I actually dislocated my shoulder at the first round. And kind of knowing a few people on the scene, they told me to get in touch with a guy called Doug Jones at Altius Healthcare up in Manchester. And luckily, I worked with him and I managed to get back for the next World Cup. And his company, he had a physio who worked with the Athens. So he kind of put me in touch with them. So that whole year, I had this person working for the Athens, Fiona, she was called, and she would take my shoulder up at every race.
Yeah, sweet. Okay.
So it's kind of knowing the people helps a lot as well. You don't necessarily have to have the person working directly for your team.
Got you. So. Yeah, fair play. And talking about setup and that side of things, I've heard you suffer quite a lot with arm pump. Is that right?
Yeah, really bad. That's been not necessarily in my arms, it always seems just in my hands. And that's been a real problem for me over the years.
Yeah. What kind of things have you tried or done to try and resolve it? Because everyone's got their own little theories, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, I still think it is very much a mental thing for me.
Right.
But I've tried different coaches, different training. Not necessarily a coach just to fix that, but I've worked with different coaches, different warm-ups, a little bit kind of to do with diet and stuff as well. And but I do think it kind of comes down to mentality of just being able to, you get into your head that your arms are getting tight and you pull the brakes, but if you can just keep on cracking on at full race pace, it's going to be easier on your body and you're not putting that extra force through your hands. And as much as it sounds easy to say that, when you're in a race run on one of these World Cup tracks like Val Nord or Val d'Isol, they're the worst ones for me because they seem to get steeper the further you're down, and they're some of the roughest, fastest tracks. And I'm at the bottom and just holding on for dear life. And you feel like you're riding at such a worse level than what you can practice at.
Yeah.
And it's really disheartening.
Yeah. And it's not like you're not putting the training in. It's not strong.
No, exactly. Yeah. So, and that's the other thing. You hear people saying, well, you don't want to bulk up because you've got more to pump up then. But then some coaches are like, no, you need to be strong. So there's not like one answer to what will fix it. And that's the problem. I think some sports, maybe a motocross or something, it's easy to any motocross track anywhere in the world. You can do 20, 30 minutes. You just do more laps potentially. And I guess your arms, maybe some tracks are rougher than others. You're going to get some kind of arm pump and you can maybe work through it.
Yeah.
And you can work out how to adjust that. But in downhill, one thing I wish I'd done is gone and done like a winter season in New Zealand or something like that. Maybe just really focus on riding these really long tracks a lot more. That's the only thing I could really think that might potentially help me through it.
Have you spent all your winters here in Wales?
Yeah, like I used to go to Spain a lot, but only ever for a couple of weeks at a time. Maybe come back and I've never gone and done that full winter season somewhere.
So other than the arm pump side of things, do you think that's hindered you in other ways, or
I think you can crack on with it. I think it's good having, say, the gym that you know where everything is, and eating food that you're comfortable with and people that you're comfortable around. I think that has its own benefits. So you're kind of in that normal routine that you used to. Maybe if you go away somewhere, you can do more riding and stuff, but maybe you can't. It's just the riding which is really a benefit. It's not the everything else.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I guess the tracks of maybe 5 or 10 years ago were a lot steeper, more technical, muddy potentially, which Wales is a great training facility for, but some of the more modern tracks are a bit different to that.
Yeah.
Wales maybe not as good a training spot as it used to be, maybe. Sure. Yeah. Hmm. So you had a big change again last off season. So you moved from Norco to Propane Factory Racing.
Yep.
Change of coach, is that right?
Yep. Yeah.
How did your training change? What did that new coach bring?
So when I rode for Norco, I was with Todd because he ran the team.
Yeah.
And he does Performax, which he coaches Aaron Gwynn and Richie Rude and all those guys. So that was pretty new for me as well. But this last year, I really wanted to work with Alan Milway just because he's relatively local, only like an hour and a half away over in Birmingham. And I knew there was a lot of guys around here who were working with him. And I liked the idea of having a bunch of people who you could go and train with at the same time and push each other on. Matt Simmons had worked with him in the past and kind of raved about him and the Aftons, and I'd seen how he'd worked and a lot about it, and a lot of other people had nothing but good words to say about him, really. So I had a chat with him and I kind of knew him anyway, and that was great, really. I'd never done that. Like every other week we'd go to Birmingham, me, Joe Breeden, Charlie Hatton, Mike Jones. Either maybe 2-3 of us would go at once, and we'd always be training with each other. You'd have this other guy to push you on a little bit, and it was great.
Yeah.
And just having that coach there in the gym with you when you're doing the sprints on the watt bike and things like that, it was a really good experience.
Yeah. And did it change your like the structure of your training very much? Was it just change the environment that you train in?
I think it was more the environment than anything.
Yeah.
Still, when I was at home, I'd be kind of going to the gym by myself, doing my own thing. And there were different programs. Maybe they focused on different areas a little bit more than others, but the main thing was that every other week I'd be going to Birmingham and having the coach with you. And I guess it gave you more chance to kind of change things as you went along.
Yeah.
Because just having Alan there watching you and seeing, and a big thing to start with, I guess, every year was kind of working on your weaknesses. So to start, we worked on kind of building up the strength in my shoulder after I'd had the operation on my dislocated shoulder. Because I'd done a year with it, but then towards the end of that year, I'd noticed things which still hadn't got fully back to full strength. Okay. So yeah. Kind of worked on that, got to a certain level, and then you went on from there.
Yeah. So. And do you think you felt the benefits of that, maybe digging a bit deeper in this last off season because you've got that competitive environment in the gym?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's hard to know for yeah. sure, but unless, are you doing much measurement with Alan?
Yeah, so we did, like the first time I went to see him, we did quite a few tests and stuff. We did the stuff on the Watt bike. I can't remember the exact names of the tests. We did a few just kind of max power things yeah. and repeated powers and like a VO2 max kind of style. I don't know if it was that okay. exact one or not. We didn't actually get around to doing the exact same day of testing around, but we did test things as we were going. We had like a lot of numbers that we'd kind of keep checking on throughout the off season.
Yeah. And good to see the progress.
Yeah. And there was a lot of progress in certain areas
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah. It's a good sign, isn't it? Cool. Yeah. And then a change of bikes as well over to the propane. Have you been riding a 29er propane this season?
29 propane. Yeah.
Yeah. Was there a choice of 275 as well? Or?
There was a choice, but because the second year on Norco, I went to 29 as well.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt like I was pretty comfortable with it. Yeah. And so we went on that. At the end of this year, I did actually try a 27.5 on the back, which was quite nice. But at the time, I was a little bit limited on time, and I had a tyre which was kind of a pre-production tyre, and it was real soft compound.
Right. Okay.
And I think it was a bit slower rolling. And it was the end of the season. I got comfortable on 29 all year, so something that I definitely would have looked into kind of carrying on this off-season.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you think the... Because how tall are you?
5'8". Okay. So pretty short.
Yeah, my height-ish. So do you think as bike geometry has progressed over the last, let's say, 5 years, bikes, we've got the bigger wheel size, the bikes are getting a bit longer. Do you think that's benefited the smaller riders as much as it's benefited the taller riders?
Probably not, no. Like you see with Minar, because I went and saw his talk the other day, and you saw his difference in bikes, and that would be a whole lot different to what mine would have been, I guess. And that's obviously benefited him a lot, having a bike that fits him, but I could ride a large 26-inch wheel bike now, probably,
yeah,
and it'd be fine for me.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
So, I mean, luckily for me, I ride quite centrally, so I could kind of, even though I'm a bit shorter and short legs, I was never really clipping my ass on the tire.
Okay.
I was quite central on the bike, so I could adapt to the bigger wheels.
Yeah.
And I think it does have its benefits still, but maybe they're not quite as pronounced as if you're a taller guy.
Yeah. Have you always ridden quite centrally, or have you learned to do that on the modern sort of longer bikes?
Yeah, maybe. Like, I feel like I have for a long time now. But then I remember when I was on my Kona, seeing pictures of me, I was really off the back yeah. then. So maybe it was the tracks, steeper tracks and yeah. stuff. But
and I think with the bikes, you kind of had to be a bit more on the shorter, older bikes.
Yeah, they were, I think so.
Quite
yeah.
happy to chuck you out the front, weren't they?
Yeah. So I always rode quite like a small or a medium sized bike. And then towards my end of my time on Chain Reaction, I was kind of pushing to ride a large bike. Sam was always on a medium. And Mike was, we were all kind of similar-ish size. Yeah. Mike was kind of pretty comfortable on a medium as well, I think. I wanted to ride a large to give my body a bit more room, and I thought it was going to help me a bit with my arms and
yeah.
kind of taking a bit of pressure off and maybe a bit more room in the middle. I don't know. And then, yeah, from there, I've kind of ridden that large bike since then.
Yeah, so maybe got used to riding in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 2019, looking back, I mean, it looks like it was a relatively tough and challenging season for you.
Yeah, definitely.
How was it from your perspective?
Yeah, really, really tough. It was unfortunate, really, because you move on to a new team and you want to start off well. And it started off all right. And then at the first World Cup, the last run before my qualifying run, I had a big crash right at the end and hurt my shoulder a bit. Didn't think much of it.
And was that the shoulder that you've had issues with?
No,
in the past?
It was my other one. My one I've had issues with is fine now, really. Right. Yeah, I did a lot of training on it, really, and that's fine. It was my other one.
Yeah.
didn't really think much of it. It was a big crash, but I thought I'd got away with it quite well. And then when we were warming up and it started pissing down with rain at the top of Maribor, I was kind of feeling a little bit of a twitch in it and that, but it was raining. I had other things on my mind, didn't think anything of it. And I can always do quite well when it rains. And put an all right kind of mid-pack solid run in them challenging conditions where you didn't know what to expect. I was really happy with that. I went to sleep that night, struggled sleeping quite badly, and woke up the next morning. Did one practice run in the morning. It's a pretty short period, and you'd always go up first run to you get, I think, an hour. So you could do two runs if you're up at the top.
Yeah.
You can do a run quickly, do a quick couple of changes, and then go again. So I did one run. I just didn't have any confidence in my shoulder at all. I went and saw Laura, who you spoke to recently.
Yeah.
And
At Santa Cruz,
and she strapped it up for me. And I decided then after that first run that I wasn't going to go up for another practice run. And I never really decided that before. I'd never been like, it's not worth, like, I'm not going to get anything out of doing another run.
Yeah.
So I got it strapped up as good as I could. And she did like a kind of rugby style bracing strap really tight just to kind of make sure it wasn't going to have any issues. And I went up and had an all right run going. I was pretty confident. I didn't really feel my shoulder. And then right at the bottom, there was it's like a natural gap over a little bum hole into a left-hander. And it was quite rough. And there's kind of two ways you could go about it. There was more of a takeoff on the right, where I remember seeing Matt Walker going off the left and you kind of had to hop.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, I decided that I was going to do the left line because it was kind of less, you weren't jumping from as high up. And I went to pull up and nothing happened.
Oh,
and I just cased into the backside, kind of bounced over the top of the berm. I managed to stay within the tapes, but I was well off the track and on going into a pretty flat section, lost a bit of time. And I mean, it wouldn't have been setting the world alight with my run anyway, right. But I was pretty well last after that, I think. It was kind of, I was just going for damage control that run, and that was damage control with the problem as well.
Yeah, so, fair play.
And then that started off a pretty poor year, really. I struggled for the next 6 weeks between then and the next World Cup. I didn't really ride at all. We went up for the National at Fort William, and that was the first time I'd ridden since then. And I was just kind of getting down.
Yeah.
Couldn't really pull my bike around. I was just bracing, holding on.
Yeah, not an easy track to come back on. No, so physical.
Although I'd felt that was the same track that I came back on after I dislocated my shoulder the other year. And surprisingly, it's not the worst track you can imagine because it's quite fast. You can just brace yourself. Whereas with some other tracks where you're really pushing, you kind of, I find when you're having to put a lot more input in the bike for shoulders, I think that's worse than just bracing yourself.
Okay.
So it probably wasn't the worst track to come back to.
Yeah.
But it wasn't great for the National. Went back home, didn't ride again for another week or so. Maybe rode once, twice before the World Cup. And then it was a pretty horrendous weekend at the World Cup with the weather, which I don't mind that weather. And then I just didn't have a good run there at all. I don't know what happened. It felt all right. Qualifying went all right again. I was kind of mid-pack and I'd actually had a big problem. I missed that road gap halfway down. I had to go around that and I was still like maybe a handful of seconds off top 20. So
okay.
I felt like, oh, maybe I'm going to put it behind me and start kind of get the season going. And then just my race run, I don't know, just didn't happen.
Yeah.
No excuses really, just didn't happen.
Fair enough. But Leogang was a bit of a better week the next weekend.
Yeah, Leogang went pretty good. Leogang's been one which I really struggled with to start with when it first came on the calendar, but the last couple of years I think I've learned how to ride it and race it, and I was within like that kind of couple of seconds of a really good result.
Yeah.
And it was like looking like my season was starting to go in the right direction.
What do you think it is then at Leogang? What you say you sort of learn how to ride it and race it. What does it need?
Well, I think the track itself changed a lot over the years. To start with, it was actually really technical. The very first year, I actually loved it.
Yeah.
It was wet and boggy and loads of roots and rocks and stuff. But it was a fresh track and there was that big kind of motorway section, which at the time, you couldn't roll down it. You were pedaling as hard as you could. So it made it really physical. And the next probably 2 or 3 years after that, it was still the same. Maybe getting a little bit easier, but that was a big make or break kind of part of the track.
Yeah.
If you could ride the top and bottom good, you were all right. but you still have to be able to really put that power down. And being a kind of smaller guy on flats, I'm never going to be the fastest guy in them flat pedally sections. So I'd never do that good in that. But then over the years, it has got a lot harder packed. And now I think, as Gwyn proved that one year with no chain, if you tuck and you get all the downsides perfect, then you can do quite well. So that's kind of come into my favour a little bit. And when it was wet there a few years ago, I did really well and it still rolled fast. But then I think I just learned that you had to be really precise and get them downsides, not just on the motorway, but like coming onto the motorway, the corner before that and stuff like that. It's just little things that like making the run like flow, not stop starting so much.
Yeah,
that definitely has helped over the last handful of years.
Sweet. And then on into Valnord, and you had a big one there, didn't you?
Yeah, again, that last run before qualifying.
Oh, man.
Big one, just slightly messed up the line into this kind of little gap that you could do. Not a proper gap, just like onto a bank and go high over a tree. And I messed up the run in, the run into this little gap, and you jump next to a kind of bush thing. And the angle that I did it, I think I clipped my pedal on it, and then it pushed all my weight towards this tree, and I just hit this tree at like Mach 10 and just, got winded, and I was on the floor, just didn't know what was going on. And then I was trying to ride down, and I was just like shaking and didn't know what
had happened. That's not good.
And weirdly, I hit it with my kind of my whole upper body, like my chest, kind of shoulder side. And that took it pretty well. The train that I've been doing, that took it really well, but I must have got like tangled up on my bike, and my kind of groin and my leg and my hip and everything took like a pretty bad beating. So I got back up to the top with not much time before qualifying. I was just couldn't really walk around and anything, and I'd never not done a qualifying run, so I was like, I didn't feel like I really should, but I just wanted to give it a go. What people don't really realize is that Valnord, the very top section, is quite flat and pedally. And
yeah, we never really see
a lot
that.
Of pumping. Yeah, you don't see it. You see people go out of the start gate, then it cuts to like the real fast.
Yeah.
So I think the first split is along probably just that top section. And I was probably like 8 or 9 seconds down just on that, because I couldn't really pump and pedal. After that, like if you'd kind of taken that bit out, I probably would have qualified. But yeah, I didn't qualify. Not far off, but that was my first time in my elite career not qualifying at World Cup.
That's
so it's
insane,
pretty good.
Yeah, what's that like? Over 10 years?
Near enough 10 years, I guess. In junior, I had two races where I didn't qualify. But yes, from elite until this year, I qualified at every single World Cup. So.
Fair play. That's an amazing record. It's a shame for it to come to an end, but it's still an amazing record.
Exactly. That was a bummer. I was pretty pissed off of myself, but I didn't want to just not try.
Yeah,
I wanted to give it a go, and I probably could have put myself through a bit more pain and maybe just squeezed through, but it would have just been squeezing through, and then the next day I felt worse anyway, so I probably wouldn't have done any better the next day anyway.
Did that take a bit of recovering from that one?
Yeah, I still kind of feel it when I've been doing film and stuff recently, pushing up the hill, it gets really sore. It's all just in my groin, and we couldn't really work out what it was. I think it was kind of to do with my like lower abdominals as well. And the annoying thing was, so my shoulder just kind of started getting a little bit better then, and I was managing to kind of get back and doing a lot of the proper training stuff in the gym, kind of doing weights above my head, and then this happens, and then I couldn't do like squats and squat jumps and things like that. So kind of went from one problem that was fine, then I went to having this other issue, and yeah, it's a bit of a pain.
Yeah, fair play. So you've been carrying kind of a bit of an injury through the whole remainder of the season then, really?
Yeah, a little bit. After Valnord, we went to Leger, which is a track that I quite enjoy. I really enjoyed the first year there when it was really boggy at Crankworx. And I felt like I was going really well, but that's probably one of the tightest World Cups we've had, I think. And I just missed out. That was like the first, I guess, legit time I've missed out on qualifying, and I felt like I was riding well. It's just one of them things where maybe if you're not pushing right at that 100%, you're just hemorrhaging that little bit of time all the way down, and you just miss out. And I don't think I was riding badly or slowly. I just wasn't pushing on the right side of, I was like just within myself a bit too much. So.
Yeah, it was a very straightforward track to look at.
Yeah.
But to actually can like carry the up the absolute top amount of speed you can through every section, I think was very
And there wasn't tough. Much room for error. It was pretty one line. Yeah. Awesome track to ride, but there really wasn't much line choice. So it was just kind of go as fast as you can on that line. And watching them top guys race that was insane.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Yeah. Amory's run still blows my mind.
I think I can like appreciate that stuff maybe more. I don't know, it's hard to say what I'm trying to say, because you watch Val d'Isère, some of these really crazy tracks, and you can see where a guy who's really committed and as an amazing rider can make time on other people, but seeing where them top guys can get them extra seconds on a track, which is not much to it, that's impressive, I think.
Yeah, and that was quite a gap as well. Like, to pull that on a track like that is something special. So, yeah, that was a historical run, that one.
Yeah.
So did that, like, obviously you had an injury, but you must, I'm guessing you're going to be beating yourself up pretty badly about something like that. How did that impact your confidence going into the last few rounds?
It was a bummer. I went home and I was pretty sore on that. But then luckily I had national champs the week, like maybe a couple of weeks after that, a Revolution, so real local to me, a track that me and a lot of the other UK guys knew anyway.
Yeah.
But I felt confident on that, and I put a good run in, and I just missed out on the podium there. So I was like, oh, well, yeah, I had a bad couple of weeks, but like, I'm only a couple of seconds behind Danny and all these guys who are still doing really good at World Cups. I was like, I'm still there or thereabouts.
Yeah, so you got some perspective back on that side of it.
So that went pretty well. I can't remember if we had another race at home or not. Then we went to Val d'Isère. It rained again before qualifying, which I like.
Yeah.
So a track which I kind of historically have struggled with because of the length and stuff. When it rains, it kind of clicks a switch and you just think about getting down. And I did pretty good in the rain, kind of mid-pack qualifier.
Yeah.
A terrible race run again, just cramped up and couldn't ride to my full potential. It's annoying one there, because the last couple of years I've had really good top halves of the run. Like, I've been, maybe not this year, but in qualifying and stuff, like, maybe 2 years on the try, I had like top 10, top 15, top 2 splits there on the real technical stuff, and then I just cramp up and lose time, and yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, average result there, but it was what it was. Went to Lenside.
Yeah, Lenside was next, yeah.
Which, again, I struggled when we first went there, but the last couple of times I've raced, I've really enjoyed it, and I did quite well there, and I was really happy with my run and how I was riding there. Kind of just missed out on the top 20 by a little bit. So I was kind of getting back into the role of things.
Yeah, and is that sort of where you were hoping to be, like new bike, new team?
Yeah, like kind of that top 25, top 20 is where I wanted, with maybe on tracks which I knew I could perform at, maybe more.
Yeah.
But like, especially after the up and down season, getting that 25th there, I was really happy.
Felt pretty good, yeah. And then on to Snowshoe, which was a pretty crazy race, new track for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. So new track for everyone, which is always good. I really enjoy going to these new places. And it was a weird track when you walked to. We'd seen the helmet cams, which is hard to really kind of get a gauge things off a helmet cam. You can't tell how steep they are and stuff. Yeah. I really liked the look of it from the get-go. Some people didn't. Some people didn't like it, and then when they rode it, they enjoyed it more. I quite liked the look of it. Some of the jumps looked a little bit sketchy. Or that one that kind of going into the woods near the top.
Yeah.
But a few runs in, I was really enjoying it. And it was really slippy that first day, kind of that morning dew and rain overnight and stuff. The rocks at the bottom were just lethal. But it was a pretty cool track, and like just a new one. Everyone was in the same boat, learning a new track from scratch. I can't remember what I did. Qualifying was all right. Again, really good splits. I think I was fourth and sixth at the first two. So I was like, oh, if I can keep that up the whole way down, I had a mistake halfway down in that run as well, and maybe lost a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And then just my race run, just did all right in the first splits again, and then just went backwards. Not really due to anything that I can put my finger on, really, that one. I don't know whether it was, I just didn't carry my speed on that bottom, kind of flatter stuff.
Yeah, the rocky stuff. Like, I guess you only got to catch a couple of edges hard and you're going to lose your speed pretty quick. So
just didn't go my way, really.
Yeah, fair play. So after a season like like you say, you've entered the season, you kind of want to prove yourself, and you buy a new team. There's been some good results in there, some stuff where, yeah. where you've shown kind of, you know, what you're capable of and what you're hoping to deliver, but a lot of tough, challenging stuff. Yeah, how do you sit at the end of the season and reflect on that, and what do you do about it?
Yeah, I really don't know, to be honest. Luckily, after the World Cup, she did Hardline, and I had a good week there, so that kind of boosted my morale quite a lot. But yeah, just injuries and stuff, and you can say, oh, well, what if I hadn't had that crash? Would it have been different? But that's what if, you know, you can't go back and change things, unfortunately. I'd like to, continue working with Alan and see if I can come back stronger, but at this point in time, I don't really know what I'm doing next year yet. Okay. So I'm just kind of seeing what's available to me and seeing, how next year kind of rolls out, really.
Yeah, so you were on, it was a one-year deal with propane.
Just one-year deal with propane, yeah.
And are there options there still? Or
Not with propane, no.
Okay.
So that's coming to an end. I'm kind of looking into things, and I probably should have been speaking to other people sooner and stuff, just in case. But so at the moment, I'm just not sure really what I'm doing.
Okay.
Looking to maybe sort out my own thing with some brands that I've worked with in the past, nice. But haven't really got anything sorted yet.
Yeah.
So just
because that can be, I've heard a few riders, end up in this position where you may be waiting to hear about something, and you hear quite late, and it's not the news you want, and then you almost miss this cycle of people getting signed to teams. What do you do in that instance? Are there still openings out there, or is it a case of, you know, you have to build your own?
So I think there probably is still openings for certain teams, but being a kind of seasoned rider like myself, I don't want to sell myself short, really. So I'd probably rather kind of try and sort my own program out than ride for like less than what I think I'm worth.
Yeah,
really.
Fair play.
But I kind of like the idea of being in an atmosphere where I'm really happy as well at this stage in my career. I just want to be happy, enjoying racing my bike, which is why everyone does it, really.
Yeah.
And I just always love going out and riding, no matter whatever kind of bike and stuff. So I just want to try and keep it enjoyable at the stage, really.
Cool. So, yeah, what would your ideal program look like? What events would you be doing? What sort of stuff?
So, yeah, I'd like to do as many World Cups as I can. Maybe the odd Crankworx. I'd like to do the British races as well.
Yeah.
But it's just fitting it all in. I've done quite a lot of EWS over the years as well, so do a handful of them, ones which I like the look of.
Yeah.
But when you think about that many different events, that already is a pretty full schedule, so you've kind of got to pick and choose what will work.
Yeah.
So, still focus on downhill, still try and get to where I think I'm capable of.
Yeah. Yeah, so what results would you have to get next season to be satisfied at the end of the year? Do you know what I mean? Like, to be like, okay, I feel like I've achieved what I want to achieve now.
I guess it's just being happy with your runs for the most part, not necessarily a particular result. I kind of maybe gone past that stage of being like, I really want to get this result, I really want to get that result. I really wanted to get a podium at one point, and I got really close a couple of times. The end of 2018, where was it? Le Bras.
Yeah.
I think that was my best chance, and I blew it by crashing my race run.
Oh, man.
I'd qualified fifth, I'd time practice, I was second, and I knew I had it in me to do good, and then I crashed. But I've kind of gone past that, and now I just want to kind of have a run which I'm really happy with and see where that places me, really.
Yeah.
So like, this last year, I was pretty happy on a track, which I don't think still suits me massively, with Lenshide getting 25th. I was still could have gone a bit better, but I was happy with my ride, and I think I'm happier when I can be happy with that, really.
Yeah. What are the tracks on the 2020 calendar that you think are your best chances? Are there certain things that you think suit you well?
I haven't really had a good look at the calendar. I did put it all in my Google calendar.
Yeah.
But seems like a pretty full on year, actually. I do like going to new places, so Loser, that could be a cool one. And it was a kind of longer, steeper track, but it's a new venue, so it's kind of, people have been there before, but I'd imagine they'd kind of change it up for a World Cup.
Yeah.
I think they're going back to Lozenge, are they?
Yes, I believe so.
I did get that earlier in the year as well. That's one of them ones where you have to be really precise, like I was saying about in Leo Gang.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really override, you've got to be precise.
Yeah.
So I did quite well with that.
And a bit shorter as well, so maybe a shorter track, easier on the arms.
Easier on my arms, yeah, and really cool venue.
Yeah.
Like completely different to any other track and just, yeah, cool place to go. So, yeah, that would be kind of maybe them two venues.
Cool, yeah. So you might.
And then the other ones like that I've done all right at in the past, yeah. I know. When you've got a bit of confidence from previous results, so you kind of have it in your back of your mind, oh, I can still do well here.
So. Yeah, and like you say, Hardline went up until the moment through those rocks went really well for you this year. You looked fast all weekend, and I guess had the win in your sights.
Give or take, yeah.
I mean, a disappointing puncture coming through that. Like, I mean, that rock section is full on, and we went and stood there in practice, and it's
I think the cameras don't really do it justice today. It's such a big like rock drop steps kind of things, and just little nagery things which catch you out as. Where it actually happened, I think either the step before it or the step after it, there was always one where I'd go over and he'd kick my back end a bit funny before I went off that drop to flat. I think I was focusing on that and then just come over the one. I think it was, so the one which kicked me before was the one after I got a puncture.
Yeah.
And I was just focusing on that next one and just a rock kind of out of nowhere. And
it properly went as well. You must have known straight away.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I heard it and then went off that next drop and just felt go to the kind of the rim, so. But as much as you can be a bit pissed off that happened and you didn't do what you maybe could have, I think I would have been kind of close to Bernard. I'm not convinced I'd have quite beaten him. I think I would have been second.
Yeah, you definitely would. It would have been tight up for first,
but,
I think.
Yeah, I think I would have been within maybe a second or so of Bernard. But just knowing I rode well, I was happy with. And I think if I'd got bumped down to fourth, maybe I'd have been a bit more. I would have been pissed off. But again, on the podium. I just missed out the year before, and I just missed out Charlie actually both times. Charlie just put me to the podium the year before, and then Charlie just put me to third in qualifying. So to finally get in that top three again there is, even with a puncture and then problems and what if, but being on the podium there and knowing that you were riding well was, that was kind of a win in itself.
Yeah, so. And a challenging track. The track of kind of two different styles, some super tech, gnarly downhill stuff, and then those huge jumps.
Yeah, exactly. Every time I go there, I'm never kind of fully confident, oh, yes, this is going to be an easy, it's going to be a walk in the park. I'm always kind of look at the jump. Even the ones I've done and been comfortable on, I'm still nervous about. And I don't think it's until you're really in that race mindset that you kind of, that race run really is the only full flat out run you do, and that's probably when the jumps are the easiest, I guess.
And you can't really there's not much places you can go to practice that kind of stuff.
Not at all, no, not really. I remember the year before, I kind of a few weeks before I started doing the 50 to 1 line at Revolution, but even then you kind of break in on the landings, so you're not over jumping the jumps, or it's completely different at Hardline, isn't it? So
you want every bit of speed you got, I guess.
Pretty much, yeah. So it's got a little bit more, like, you have to judge it now over the years because it's got a bit more hard and compact. But, it's a crazy race. And I think that kind of adrenaline and that feeling I get going every year keeps drawing me back.
Yeah.
A couple of times I've been like, oh, I don't really want to come back. But then you go there, you get scared, and you kind of work through it with all these other guys kind of having the same emotions. It's a really cool week.
Yeah, it's a bit more collaborative than a lot of the World Cups.
Yeah, definitely. That first run that everyone does and we all go up and kind of session in the jumps, and some guys do it really easy, and then but they like help encourage everyone on to get through it, and it's a really cool atmosphere.
Nice. So back for redemption in 2020 then?
I think so, yeah. Definitely. Excellent. That's definitely one I'll do.
Yeah.
I'm more of a definite doing that again this year than or next year than I've been with any other year. So
fair play. Good stuff. All right, well, we're getting close to the end of our time, so we'll hit up our final few questions. First of those, if our listeners had £150 to spend to improve their performance on a bike, what would you recommend they go and spend it on?
So I've been thinking about this, what I was going to say, because I know you say it in all your ones, and it's a hard one to say, but I guess it'd be a few things. I think things like brake pads. I kind of feel a lot of people's bikes, and I don't like the feel of their brakes,
okay.
And they got worn-out brake pads, or
maybe
pads and discs, just having a good bite to your brake, really. Maybe that's a brake bleed or something as well.
Have you got a go-to pad? Is there a particular brand or like material that you like to use?
I've just used SRAM brakes for donkey's years now.
Okay.
So I'm pretty comfortable the way they feel. They're just like a metallic pad for the most part, I think.
Yeah. When would you change that, or do you not really?
So this last year's probably been the most part. I've kind of started learning a bit more about when it would help to change, and that's just... So metallic one's better in the wet, I think, isn't it? And then if it's like a long, hot track where it's going to heat up a lot, so not really anywhere in the UK.
Yeah.
So you can use a metallic one, I'd say, all year round in the UK.
Okay.
But if you go in Val Nord, Val de Sol, places like that, then you want to use the organic pads, isn't
right.
it?
Okay.
So just because they deal with the heat a lot better. Take a bit more bedding in, maybe don't quite have that sharper bite, but they're a lot more consistent for a run.
Okay.
Got so it. I'd say if you're running in the UK, you could just have a standard metallic pad and it's pretty good, but just you want to make sure you've got a good amount of pad life left in them and that they're biting well on the pad, on their disc.
Yeah.
I think that makes a big difference. Just things like in grips, just things that you're touching and using.
Yeah.
And then if you've got any money left over after like them kind of things, just go on an uplift day or something.
Yeah, you can learn a lot on an uplift day for sure. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. So. And yeah, you're a Revs local, so.
Mm-hmm. I usually go on a Friday afternoon during my training kind of season.
So. Nice. Yeah, it's an awesome place to ride.
Yeah. I usually go once the puddles have been splashed out in the morning by everyone, I'll turn up in the afternoon.
You're a smart man.
Do a couple of hours and then go home. So.
That's the wisdom of a few years on the circuit.
Definitely.
And then if you could wind back the clock and sit down with yourself age 16, what advice would you give him?
I think I'd tell myself to kind of believe in myself and be a bit more kind of committed and confident in myself and my own abilities, really. I think I second guess myself quite a lot, and I have done all the time, and not just in racing but in general other things.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've kind of wanted to go to New Zealand for an off season, but I've always been, I don't have this for my bike, it's not arrived yet, I can't really go until I've got that, and I could have realistically just gone and dealt with it when I was out there, and I would have had that benefit of being out there. And then with like maybe speaking to sponsors and stuff and believing in that I'm worth as much as I'd say just believe in yourself a bit more, be a bit more confident.
Do you think you've got better at that over the years?
I think so, yeah, but still being a bit of a I'm just a bit kind of shy, I guess. Don't like to kind of put myself out there too much.
Yeah it's a tricky one for sure.
Yeah.
All right. If you could have a coaching session then with anyone, and you've had some pretty special riders as teammates, who would it be and what would you want to learn from them?
Again, kind of tried to think about this one. I know some people you say can have a mountain biking one and a non-mountain biking
one. Yeah, of course.
But in mountain biking, just, I don't know, who would be somebody who's just like really committed, but I don't know. Like you said, I've rode with Sam Hill.
Yeah.
So a lot of people would say Sam Hill.
Yeah, that comes up quite a few times.
Yeah. And watching him ride the way he can do things is pretty insane, but I think that's just instinctive for him. Maybe he wouldn't be able to teach you how to do it necessarily.
True. Yeah.
Like Fabian or somebody, maybe he seems to be somebody who can really put into words like how you do things, maybe explain things a little bit more, somebody like that.
Yeah, he's got a good energy as well, I think it would be a very positive day going riding with Fabian.
I think when I was growing up I didn't maybe have the best opinion of Fabian, no, not really for any particular reason, but then when I kind of got to know him through racing, he's always a nice guy, he'd always say hello, and he seems to he's really really knows what he's talking about. I think
there was just a bit of a negative like thing against French riders general in the UK. There was,
I think they just had like a kind of didn't have that cool image.
It's definitely changed with like the new school, Loic and Amory and all that lot.
And they were just a bit more kind of square and like focused on the racing back then, weren't they? People think it wasn't cool,
but
at the end of the day they were winning races.
That is very
true.
That's
what you're there to do, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And then the last question, what's something that you do every day that you feel benefits you?
Don't know. Feed my cat so it doesn't whinge at me all day. Pretty much.
Yeah. Is there anything you feel like you should do every day that you don't, that you kind of wish you did?
Some kind of exercise. right. stretching this time of year. Actually, really wish I did a lot more stretching and stuff, because at the end of the season I've been kind of not really been training properly, and my shoulders really hurt me at the moment, my neck and stuff. I haven't been having like massages semi-regularly yeah. anymore, so I'm going to book a massage tonight. So yeah, I think stretching is a big thing. When you get into that thing, when you stretch most days, it definitely, your body feels better for it.
Yeah, you start to feel the niggles when you slow down and come into an off season, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, if people want to follow your course and see where you end up next year and what projects you end up doing, what's the best place to find you?
Instagram, I think, is my main one.
Yeah.
JSmithDH.
Cool.
I do have a Facebook page, which I don't update quite as much, but I still do. Just, I think if you just look for Joe Smith, wicked. MTB or DH or something, I'll cool. probably come up on there.
We'll find it. We'll stick it yeah. in the show notes with the Instagram as well.
But I've also kind of started doing a bit of a YouTube page as well.
Okay.
Just doing some edits. Not really vlogging, I wouldn't say, okay. but like just putting a few edits up and
more
stuff.
Right, like riding focused.
Yeah, kind of. Quite got into doing like kind of doing editing, not really proper editing, but like just making little videos and stuff. It's yeah. quite fun. Me and my mates from around here nice. Doing bits and bobs. So yeah,
cool.
Just put a few videos up, and yeah, I think I'll be keeping doing that semi regularly over the winter, every kind nice. Of couple of weeks.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll get all those links and stick them in the show notes. People yeah. can find them there.
That'd be cool.
And wish you all the best for putting together whatever next year looks like.
Yeah, thank you.
It'd be exciting to see what you end up doing.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah.
Nice one. Cheers, Jay.
Speaking to you. Cheers.
All right, that's it for this episode with Joe. I hope you enjoyed listening. A massive thank you to Hunt Bike Wheels for supporting the podcast. Hunt have very generously offered Downtime listeners 10% off all products for the month of December using the code DOWNTIME10 at the checkout over at huntbikewheels.com. That's Downtime, all lowercase, followed by the number 10. Head over and check out what they have to offer. If you've got a couple of minutes, then leave us a review wherever it is you listen to the podcast. Give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to help support the podcast, then share the love at downtimepodcast.com/shop. Also, please spread the word, tell your friends about the podcast, and share our episodes on your social media. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon. But until then, get out and ride.